It was all prepared and calm, and then the screen started flashing, and then, you know, your heart rate goes right through the roof. So I was sort of afraid the mic would not work too, but that's just me being paranoid, I guess. So I want you to take a second and imagine that you're working on an operations team for a small startup. And it's growing all the time, which means things are on fire. You know, you're understaffed, and you're constantly fighting fires, and you know, your production system is, you know, a bit of a mess, right? You have lots of single points of failure, but of course you can't prioritize them right now because you don't have the money. And you know, one day, as it always comes along, a node goes down, maybe some database of some kind, and causes a huge smallest disruption. But your operation team goes into chaos because you don't know why it happened. You're investigating the node afterwards, and you have no idea why it happened. There was no spike in traffic. And of course, a few minutes later, your CEO comes into the room, and you're expecting, I don't know, having to explain yourself or something like that, except he has a smile on his face. And, you know, why are you smiling? Well, turns out he turned the node off on purpose as sort of his own not automated chaos monkey. To make sure that you were on your toes. And so I'm an infrastructure developer at Shopify. We're an e-commerce company up in Canada, and we have a legend on our team that, you know, quite a few years ago when we were a much smaller company, the CEO did exactly this just to make sure that we could recover from certain kinds of failures. So it's kind of fun. We're a much bigger company now, though. We have about 500,000 merchants who use our platform to sell things every day. And that means that we need an infrastructure team that really cares about reliability. And so today I'm going to be talking to you a bit about what resiliency means at Shopify. And then I'm going to be introducing you to a tool we built about 3 years ago called ToxiProxy, which is a failure testing tool we use to improve the resiliency of our applications. So resiliency is all about failure, and reasoning about failure is quite challenging. And that's mostly because we have these really big systems with all sorts of kinds of failures, way too many kinds of failures. Our systems are very complicated. And even if you could understand the system in an instance of time, they're constantly changing too, right? You have people shipping code, and even when people aren't shipping code, you know, there's configuration state that's changing, and your traffic patterns are changing. You know, there's lots of state that's always changing. And so what that means in practice is our intuition is wrong about failure. Like, you can't guess what's wrong. Even if you have access to a dashboard and you know something's on fire, it's so challenging to link, you know, a dashboard to what the actual incident is. And we experience this all the time. And so we use tools to figure out what's going wrong and to improve our application over time. And in the beginning for Shopify, really the only tool we had access to was the incident. So you have natural failures in production. Say maybe a database writer goes down because someone did some maintenance and made a mistake. And you have to learn from those experiences and slowly improve your application. So you have incidents, and you find the root cause, and then you ship fixes. And you do this again and again in loop. And over time, of course, your application becomes more reliable and more resilient. But as time goes on, you know, your little company is no longer can no longer deal with downtime. Downtime has become quite expensive. And, you know, we're an e-commerce company, which means that one of our key metrics is checkouts per second. And so because of that, when we're talking about error budgets for downtime, we can actually talk about error budgets in terms of an actual value, a monetary value. And so, you know, we don't want downtime. And as time went along, we decided we needed a team to really focus on reliability, and so we started running game days. And game days are artificially exercising a known failure scenario in production. So it's specifically different from incidents, because incidents, they'll happen whether you like it or not. Game days are intentional. And they aren't exercising unknown failure scenarios. You know your application is probably already resilient to a certain kind of failure, but how do you confirm? You have to test it out in production. You can't test it out any other way. You could wait for an incident to happen, but if you wait for an incident that isn't controlled, And if you don't control the situation, then you'll probably go right through your error budgets. So our big game day, or my favorite game day example for us, is the flash sale. That our traffic patterns, like probably most organizations, sort of follows a curve throughout the day as people wake up in the countries that where most of our users live. And it's a little different, though, because you'll see spikes throughout the day. And sometimes they're little spikes, sometimes they're quite large spikes. And those spikes are flash sales. So what flash sales are is some merchant has maybe limited inventory and maybe lowered prices. And maybe they have a large Twitter following. Maybe, you know, some hip celebrity is selling some strange product on the internet. They send out a tweet to their following, and suddenly this horde of users all comes to your application trying to buy this limited product. And for many years, flash sales were a huge problem for us. We had teams dedicated to trying to make sure that flash sales wouldn't take down the platform, right? We're a multi-tenant platform, which means, you know, isolation's a big deal. And back then, we didn't really have very good isolation. So if a single flash sale came in and broke things, the entire platform could experience issues. And so one of the ways we solved this problem is through having regular game days. So imagine if you could simulate a flash sale. Imagine if you could build a load testing tool, a distributed load testing tool, that would pretend to be a flash sale mob. And then you would run that regularly on your system, and things would break, of course, but you'd isolate it as much as you could because it was in a controlled environment, or at least people were aware, ready to respond. And then as you ran this again and again, slowly over time, you'd become more resilient to these sorts of flash sales. And that's exactly what we did. Now we have this flash sale system on an automated timer, and every week we run a flash sale on our system. And most weeks, no one notices it happened. But it's important to keep on running them because we don't want regression. So that's really what a game day is, right? You run some sort of failure on your system in production. You hope nothing breaks, because it shouldn't, because you should already be resilient to that kind of failure. But if something does break, you ship a fix. So incidents and game days were the core of our resiliency effort. But then we still wanted to keep on improving. If you look at the qualities of incidents and game days, one of their big values is that they're quite authentic, meaning that, you know, 100% authenticity is a production incident, right? We care about behavior in production. We don't care about behavior in staging. We don't care about behavior in development. Just because you fix a bug in staging or development doesn't mean that it's fixed in production. So it's important when you're running these sorts of tests that you run them in production. Game days are also mostly authentic, right? Because you're still messing around in production, but there's still a human error there, right? You're running commands, you know, you're taking down a node with IP table rules rather than through some natural cause, which means theoretically the kinds of failures you simulate aren't quite as vast as what they can happen in the real chaotic world. But they're mostly authentic. The issue is, though, with that authenticity comes high production impact. Obviously, incidents have high production impact. Game days less so because they're controlled, right? You can have whoever's on call at the time be ready to respond quickly. You can intentionally isolate the failure, and you can revert it very quickly. Everyone here who has a pager probably knows that production incidents are automated. They will keep on happening, whether you like it or not. Game days, though, on the other hand, at least by default, aren't. And so it turns out it's quite expensive to get a bunch of developers in a room to run failures in production for a few hours, because you don't just want to do it once. You want to keep on doing it over time because you want to avoid regression. And so that ends up being quite expensive because you have multiple hours over a long period of time, probably forever, because you never want to regress. And I think the most interesting one is what we're going to call accessibility, which is, can all developers use these sorts of tools? I think we forget sometimes that when you're messing around in production, we forget about the product, or at least I forget about the product. I forget about what our system actually does. I see things as logs, and, you know, I see things as monitoring tooling, but I forget that there are users behind the applications that we run. And the thing is that resiliency is a product concern, that we don't care about failures unless they affect our users, really, right? And so we care about the user experience behind our failures, And we want that user experience to be good. And it tends to be that infrastructure people are bad at user experience. I mean, I'm sure there are people who are not, but at least I am bad at user experience. And so we need tooling that can help product developers reason about resiliency so that they can degrade applications' products properly. And unfortunately, game days and production incidents aren't very friendly to non-infrastructure developers. So the sorts of problems that we have with those game days and those incidents is that we need a way to prevent regression. We need these tools to be accessible to all developers, not just infrastructure developers. We want to lower customer impact as much as we can. And then we want to do all of this while maintaining authenticity. We want to keep on making sure that the testing we're doing is how real failure scenarios will happen in production. And these qualities are hard to find. If you go and you read the Chaos Engineering book, when we created this tool I'm going to be talking about, this book wasn't out, but I just don't think it was. But if you go and read about Chaos Engineering, some of their principles line up with our previous goals. Chaos Engineering is running experiments in production to cause and fix unknown failure scenarios. So specifically, you don't know what's going to fail, and so you need to sort of experiment in your system to try to discover unknowns. And the sorts of things they care about, for example, is automating experiments to run continuously, which is sort of the same as preventing regression, and minimizing the blast radius, which is very similar to lowering customer impact, and then running experiments in production, which really the reason we care about running in production is because we want that high authenticity. Turns out chaos engineering is a lot of work, though. And for us, at least 3 years ago, it wasn't the right choice. We had at least a lot of low-hanging resiliency fruit, and we knew how our application could fail, right? We knew about the single points of failure. We knew what incidents were causing us problems, and so we just needed some structure to send out teams to go fix those issues. And so what we ended up building was a tool called ToxiProxy to help us with this effort. ToxiProxy is a TCP proxy that sits between our application and all of its external dependencies. So we have a ToxiProxy instance in between all of the connections. And then this runs in our development and test environments. And from our automated test suite, we can inject failures into the proxy and then assert behavior of our application. So we can see how our application will react to the failures we inject into the proxy. And we can use ToxiProxy to simulate all sorts of different kinds of failures. It turns out there's really only three failures that we use the most. One is injecting latency mostly for timeouts, at least how I use it to simulate timeouts. Blackholing data, making sure the data never actually is received by the external service. And then probably the most common one we use is rejecting connections, as if the service has crashed. And so what we do is we can use ToxiProxy to do reactive testing. And when I say reactive testing, I mean we have an incident, we find the root cause, and we ship a fix. But how do we know that fix works? And also, how do we know in 2 months, in a year, how do we know that it still works? And so the answer is to write a ToxiProxy test. An example of this might be we have one of these common flash sales coming in. And the flash sale, you know, we're having capacity issues, and it somehow takes down one of our Redis databases. And we have an automated deploy coming out at the same time. By accident, I guess. Now, unfortunately, our application boot process relies on this Redis being up. That's by accident. That's a bug. And after the incident's complete, you know, it turns the entire system into chaos because the deploy gets stuck in a middle state and the flash sale's going on, and you can imagine the fire. You know, we fix it quickly. But the solution is obviously to remove the dependency, because the application boot process shouldn't depend on any external services. You need a network call to boot your application. That's kind of scary. But again, how do we know that fix actually worked? And how do we make sure that in a year's time, someone doesn't add another separate external dependency by accident? And the answer is to write a toxiproxy test. So the toxiproxy test might look something like this. We use a Ruby client library mostly because our largest application is a giant Rails monolith. But we have client libraries in all sorts of different languages. In this case, we're saying, hey, toxiproxy, select every single proxy that our application connects to by name. In this case, we're using .star regex to select everything. Take them all down, as in have them all reject connections. And then with all these services down, assert that the application can boot. So whatever, we can implement some method that boots the application. And we're just going to make sure that that's successful. And now that this is in our automated test suite, every time someone deploys a change to production, we can run this test automatically and ensure that no one ever adds a dependency to the boot process like that again. So toxiproxy solved a lot of these problems for us, at least to a certain extent, that it's accessible to all developers because it's built into our test suite, which means developers know how to write tests already. They already test their work. And we can provide a simple API for them to reason about resiliency. And then because we're running in test and development, there's no customer impact. We've managed to do this while maintaining a lot of authenticity. Because it's a network-level proxy, we're quite sure that the failures we simulate are very similar to the failures we simulate in production. And so an actual production node crashing is very similar to rejecting connections with toxiproxy. Obviously not quite as authentic. And then because it's built into our automated test suite, over time, the issues won't regress. So we have a few hundred toxiproxy tests in our main application and then a whole bunch of other ones scattered throughout a number of other ones, a number of other applications. And all you really need, as I said, is a thin client library. We use a Go and Ruby client library. The community has client libraries in a bunch of other languages. And writing your own isn't very challenging. Toxiproxy is just a binary daemon you run, and it exposes an HTTP API, and all you have to do is write a thin client to talk to that API and hook that into your test suite. And this is still a tool we use all the time. It's not like we just wrote a bunch of tests and never use the tool again. Just last week, we were running a game day on our ZooKeeper cluster, and it turned out that it got into some weird state where the client got hung up because of a timeout. And you know, we fixed it, but the trouble with those sorts of bugs is reproducing them is quite challenging, and we ended up writing a toxiproxy test that could reproduce that bug, and then we're going to use that test to fix the bug. Of course, I haven't fixed it yet because, well, I have no idea what's going on. That one is keeping me up at night. Not just reactive testing, though. We also use proactive testing with toxiproxy. And proactive testing meaning we aren't responding to some fire from the past, but we're actually looking for fires into the future. Proactive testing for us revolves a lot around this idea of the resiliency matrix, where on the top of the matrix, you have all your user-facing sections, user-facing features of your application. Users could be customers. Users could be other people that use the service at your work. And then over on the left side, you have the services that those user-facing features depend on. And if you can fill out the intersections and find out how your user-facing features depend on certain services, that's a really useful tool for a number of reasons. Specifically, if we look at the MySQL service here, we can see that checkout's down when MySQL's down because it depends on those transactions, whereas storefront isn't down. It's only degraded. Why? Because storefront can rely on caching and read-only requests. So now that we've confirmed, you know, just through memory that storefront is degraded when we wrote this resiliency matrix, we can write a toxiproxy test to confirm that our hypothesis is true. So we might write something like this. We say toxiproxy take down the MySQL writer and then send a GET request to a read-only page and assert that that read-only page is still working properly. And now that this is in our automated test suite, we know that this won't regress into the future. So this is sort of what resiliency looks like at Shopify. We have incidents, and we learn from them, and then we write fixes and write toxic proxy tests. We run regular game days. We find out what breaks. We ship fixes and toxic proxy tests. And then we try to create resiliency matrices for our applications. And then we reason about every single box of that matrix and confirm that our hypotheses are true. What's next, though, on our resiliency path? This has worked well for us so far, but it's not perfect. One of the things we want to do is we want to make sure that all applications have resiliency matrices. It would be incredibly useful. Imagine if, for every single application at your organization, you could go to a documentation page and find a large matrix that shows what it depends on. Right? That would be incredibly useful during incident response. That would be incredibly useful during maintenance, when adding features to your services, and then onboarding too. We want to integrate more of our applications with ToxiProxy, and specifically we want to do it by default because developers tend not to want to do things unless you make it really, really easy for them. So we want to make it easy. The easiest way to do that is just to have it on by default. And then ToxiProxy isn't a solution to everything. It simulates layer 4 network issues very well, but unfortunately our production systems are much more complicated than that. And so for majority of failure scenarios, we still need to run game days in production. And so we want to keep on running more game days. And not just that, we want to automate the game days. So like we automated the flash sales so that they run every week, we want to automate other things. Like right now, I'm on a team doing DC evacuation, and we have a tool that we can run manually to evacuate between data centers, but we want to put that tool onto a weekly automated rotation so that every week we fail over between data centers to make sure that at some future time when we have an incident where we need to do that, those muscles are exercised already. So just to get from this talk, look into using a tool like ToxiProxy or ToxiProxy itself. Keep on running game days, and consider building resiliency matrices for all your services and sharing them with other people on other teams. ToxiProxy is an open source project. You can find it on GitHub. And the README is a great introduction for how to use it and a bit of the reasoning behind why we built it. Thanks.
Thank you. Any questions? No questions? Yeah. Come to the mic, please.
So one of the things I often want to test is race conditions. That is, you know, what happens if the network connection fails right after this other event happens? Is there anything in ToxiProxy or another tool that you know of to make it easier to write that kind of test?
Oh, gosh. I mean, you can imagine that if you triggered just serially in code, you triggered the one thing you wanted to test and then turn the proxy off right after. Mm-hmm. You could try to get the race condition, but isn't the whole thing, the issue with race conditions is that, there's no guarantee. I don't know.
And often it's, you know, microseconds.
Yeah, exactly. And the HTTP call to the service would be too long. So I think that wouldn't work.
Any other questions? Yeah.
Thinking about that previous question, maybe if you could have ToxiProxy do random slowdowns of different parts of the services, you could eventually provoke a race condition.
Yeah. So one thing about ToxiProxy is you can implement your own proxies. So the three I talked about are ones that we have implemented by default, but you can go and you can write your own toxic that theoretically could continuously run for a number of minutes and inject failures randomly to try to bring out a race condition, I guess.
Yeah. So my actual question was, what do you see yourself, what do you not have in ToxiProxy that you'd like to put in one of these days?
We have an open PR up that allows for people to write protocol-aware toxics, which sounds like a really neat idea in practice. The code's a bit of a mess, and I'm not convinced that, like, one of the big examples is, you know, could we parse the HTTP request and then mess with the headers or something like that and then send it on its way. One of the biggest issues I've had with testing HTTP is everyone uses HTTPS, and suddenly proxying HTTPS becomes a lot harder. But that's probably the thing I'm most excited for, is protocol-aware toxics.
Have you played with Envoy, Lyft's project at all?
No.
There's some possible interaction that between ToxiProxy and Envoy that could be useful. Lyft, it's a sidecar that allows you to proxy all your traffic between services. So, we use it to establish SSH or SSL, so like you can do HTTP between the service and localhost, and then HTTPS between the services between the hosts.
Oh, neat. Okay, yeah.
Okay, thank you. Thanks, speaker again.